Hi, my name is Michael Kremer, and welcome to the We Make It Work Corporate Real Estate Podcast. Today, I'm talking with Bill Knightley, Chief Executive, Global Occupier Services at Cushman & Wakefield, about an occupier survey conducted in partnership with Cornet Global that takes the pulse of CRE leaders around the world to understand what it is that occupiers want. Bill, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here with you.
I think there's been a lot in the press about what's happening in cities and happening with office buildings. So the survey highlights that CBDs are still the preferred locations for HQs. So what's going on with that?
Yeah, good topic to start with. To be clear, despite what we read in the headlines, there has not been a mass exodus of companies out of central business districts or urban locations. And 2/3 of the firms in our data set still see CBDs as their preferred location for headquarters and other substantial offices. Despite challenges early in the pandemic, CBDs continue to offer central locations superior access to deep pools of highly educated talent. I was in New York just last week and it was busy and the trains were full and the restaurants were packed. So certainly folks are still living and working in CBDs. That said, certain markets are struggling more than others. And there is no doubt that the companies are expanding how they think about their recruiting efforts and recruiting, frankly, around the world. Approximately 25% of the firms we surveyed indicate that they're literally recruiting from anywhere in the world. And that's very clearly a direct impact of hybrid work and what we've experienced in the last few years. So backing way up from it, Michael, I think what this tells us is that for many companies, the CBD office will remain an important hub. However, probably being transformed in terms of its purpose, in terms of how organizations think about using it. It's probably not just a big box for people to have their desks and housing of daily workers and commuters. You see clients being much more intentional in terms of how they use the space. Talking with a financial services client in New York last week, they're thinking about consolidating their New York footprint and then investing pretty heavily in that consolidated space to encourage more of the collaboration and innovation that we've been talking about for the last few years.
Right. And another key takeaway from the survey, it's exactly what you're talking about, is that communal space is set to double. So maybe can you just go into a bit more detail about sort of what is changing at the office? What are companies doing when they're thinking about why they want people to come in to the office rather than work from home?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is ebbing and flowing pretty much in real time. And, you know, historically, we've probably seen cycles of more or less communal, more or less hot desking versus dedicated, et cetera. But certainly densities are declining as dedicated desk and office space is being reduced. Moving forward, you know, we're hearing from most of our clients, and the survey data suggests maybe upwards of 25% a reduction in portfolio size. So this kind of, I'd say, pressure of, in this environment to reduce costs, you know, with the other influence of trying to get folks back in the office, folks are really struggling with how do you manage that decision, but I'm certainly a focus on reducing costs. Now, to your question specifically, the share of space being dedicated to, say, we instead of me, is expected to double from maybe roughly 20% to maybe as much as 40%. So this is what we're talking about with why do we have that office? Why do we have that space? It's critical for both the formal and informal interactions. You know, we've been talking about collaboration, innovation, creativity, training, mentoring, all of these things since we've been out of the office. So this need is becoming, I think, the dominant reason, or if you will, the pull factor to try to get folks back in the office. We have to offer people something. It's not going to get people in the office if they come and sit in an office and talk on the screen all day long. So we really need to help the industry understand how to design and build compelling space to get people back in the office.
Great. And I think from the survey, the number one takeaway, which you've just touched on, is that cost is now on a par with talent as the most important strategic driver for corporate real estate. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about that and how that relates to the whole issue of, I guess, ESG and technology and what you've just been talking about?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really interesting topic that continues to evolve. My personal belief is there these two trends are completely interlinked. Whether cost is more important one day versus talent the next day, really difficult to say. They're so interlinked. And while we're not technically in a recession in most parts of the world, clearly most companies are looking for cost reduction opportunities in the cycle, especially in the West and clearly in the United States. I would argue that in addition to cost and talent, Michael, that the carbon or emissions is directly interlinked as well. So with these three factors combining, we're going to see a flight to quality. And that flight to quality is an attempt to optimize all three of these factors. So consolidate space into a very attractive asset and that your top talent wants to be in, but is also very friendly environmentally, you know, maybe a net zero building or close to that. I will caveat that with one comment. You know, in the United States, for example, unemployment is still at near all-time lows. You know, we were at 3.4% in the last reading, 3.7% this month. So the war for talent is still a very important driver at the macro. And no doubt certain industries, and we read about this in the press every day, particularly in tech, are under more cost pressure than others and are experiencing more layoffs, but unemployment is still incredibly low.
Great. And in touching on ESG, the special feature, if I can call it that, of the survey this year was ESG. Last time we did it, it was ranked 8th in importance. It's moved up to 5th. I don't think any of us are surprised by that. I guess the thing that surprises me is that it's not even higher on the agenda. But can you kind of dig into that a little bit more? Is it not important enough for people to be still paying attention to?
You know, this is an interesting and dynamic topic as well, because ESG or broad bucket sustainability, obviously there's a lot of different components to unpack there. Some of the groups or cohorts that I participate in have been debating this. You know, is here to stay, obviously, from a governance perspective, but are we going to, as large corporates, lose focus on either the E or the S as we come under cost pressure? So I don't know, Michael, maybe some of that is moderating what you would expect to see in terms of it becoming more important in this particular moment in time. You know, that's certainly a debate. But there's no doubt that the focus on all things sustainability, I think in particular emissions or, you know, the environmental side of ESG are heightened. We're still very early in the process. With our survey, as you know, right now, maybe 2/3 of respondents have goals, publicly stated goals, if you will, or internal goals. However, only maybe 40-45% of that group has implemented measures to reach those goals. So it's going to be an incredible focus for our industry, given the impact of the built environment and certainly all of our clients for the next decade. It's important, I think, too, to recognize that there are very material geographic differences in this. For example, in the U.S., the survey says, and I experience this on a daily basis with our clients, that the number one reason for tackling ESG is more around brand. Compare that to maybe in Europe, where it's much more focused around climate change. Survey also tells us that occupiers are willing to pay upwards of a 20% premium on buildings with lower or net zero carbon footprint. Interestingly enough, the survey showed smaller companies are willing to pay even more of a premium, maybe north of 25%, which coincidentally, I think, dovetails nicely back to the 25% reduction in space that we were talking about previously, and, you know, with the flight to quality. So my view is, you know, in short, cost, talent, carbon, they're all intrinsically linked, unlike any other time in history. Incredibly complex problem for corporates to try to solve right now. And real estate service providers, I think, are well positioned to help clients think through these factors more than ever before. We understand the built environment. We understand the labor analytics. We understand the talent game. We certainly understand cost. So I think about it in those three buckets. You know, what are you going to focus on cost? It's figure out your portfolio size first, then think about how you're reducing your OpEx. Talent, you know, we call it total workplace. And what we mean is, how do we manage hybrid work wherever you're working, including the home, by the way, and think about where is the best talent located at a very granular level as you do that analysis. And Carbon, I think, is probably the most obvious one. It's broadly known that the built environment contributes very heavily to global emissions, maybe 40%, just that's commonly used. So as we think about it in our business for our clients, you know, what does a multi-year asset lifecycle problem look like or program look like? You know, couple that with the right footprint and location strategy, and you know, that's going to be really critical to achieving the commitments that many of our corporate clients have already made to the public.
Great. So it really is a kind of a fascinating time for cities and what's going on with them, what's going on with the built environment. We've got economic forces, which are maybe playing against us. And then we've got ESG and all the technology changes that we're seeing. So great talking to you, Bill. Thanks very much for the insight, and see you again soon.
It's hard to imagine a more exciting time in the space. Thanks a lot for having me, Michael.